It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in.
Eric Bischoff is an idiot.
We have 2 more hours of this.
Maybe the single stupidest idiot that ever got into wrestling.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and threaten me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Welcome to episode 762 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off here for Forbidden Door Sunday. It is June 26, 2022. I am the Solo Monster, and let me just apologize right off the bat if I sound terrible, which I do, if I sound any different. For those of you who tuned into the stream on Friday night, I was even worse. Reason being, I managed to avoid the Rona for 2.5 years, but it finally caught up to me this week, and so I have COVID, and it sucks. The good news is, as I sit here recording this here, is that I finally did break the fever, but I'm sure it'll come back. It's been coming back and forth. It got as high as, I think it was 102.5 the other night, but it sucks, and it's a miserable experience. I don't wish this on anybody. And I'm only in, I would say this is probably day 3, probably. So, probably still a ways to go. But yeah, it sucks. It kind of threw a monkey wrench into all my plans heading into what is a very busy weekend. And not only a busy weekend, but a very busy week. It doesn't end here. You know, we've got Forbidden Door tonight. Tomorrow night is the return of John Cena on Monday Night Raw. Wednesday is Blood and Guts on Dynamite. Then we have Money in the Bank in less than a week coming up next Saturday on pay-per-view. So we got a lot going on. And anyway, so I just wanted to give you the heads up on why I sound the way I do. And I apologize for that. Take advantage of the Audible offer. I did want to make sure I mentioned that. A lot of you have taken me up on this offer. A lot of you. And I thank you for that, because every time somebody signs up, it does help the podcast. But we have a lot of people who have cashed in on their free John Moxley audiobook. Again, normally the audiobook, which just dropped, it's brand new, would go for about $21. If you use our link to sign up for a 30-day trial of the Audible service, you get it for free. And even if you cancel your trial in that period so you don't get billed, you get to keep the book no matter what. Now, you get 1 credit for 1 free book if you are an Amazon Prime member. You get 2 credits. So start thinking about what other books you might want to cash in too. I've been told that by people. I was not aware of that. But some people who used our link apparently had 2 credits, and I couldn't figure out why. I believe it's because they're Prime members. So if you want recommendations on other books, I would recommend, you know, Daniel Bryan's book is on there. The Death of WCW. Or Nitro. Nitro by Guy Evans. 17 hours of audio. I have the paperback version, and it's as thick as the dictionary. So if you're looking for the definitive book on the WCW Nitro era, they've got business metrics in there, interviews with people who work directly for Turner Broadcasting. You are not going to find a more accurate, more complete picture than the one that is painted in that book, and that also is up on Audible. So I should probably give you the link. audibletrial.com/solomonster. That's the link you want to use. audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Got a lot of nice comments from people who got a kick out of the Magic Spoon ad that I played on the stream the other night. We are doing business with Magic Spoon again, and so again, if you want to get in on that offer, it's magicspoon.com/Solomonster. We got all kinds of offers for you guys. But anyway, I want to thank everybody who made a PayPal donation to support the show. Again, $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez. Thank you again for the nice message. Awesome Anthony Anguiano. Thank you as well for the kind words. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton. Night Stalker Nayef Alsafar. Big B Brian Becerra. Out of Control Cody Thomas. Yvonne Bruiser Balak. Killshot Keith Hart. The Moldovan Masochist, Alexandru Mata. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep. John Raging Mad Riffle, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, Luck is for Losers, Lance Flint, haven't heard from Lance in a while, The Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel Cavalotes, Shin Superkick Akuma, The Alabama Assassin Chris Young, and Matt Scott. He wanted a wrestling nickname, and you got one, buddy. I hereby dub thee Muscle Man, Matt Scott. He says also, thank you. I've been running a charity challenge this month for Bliss in the UK, who help premature and sick babies. Listening to the sound off has gotten me on the verge of my 100-kilometer target for the month of June. So, congrats to Matt. That is awesome. And Dean the Mighty Mo Mowbray. You've heard me mention his Etsy store before, Scenescape Shop. He has just finished a new painting of John Cena ahead of his big return on Raw tomorrow night. Also new in his store, he's got paintings of The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. You can find these prints and his other work on Etsy. Just go to etsy.com/shop/scenescape shop. That's all one word, Scenescape Shop. And on YouTube as well, at Scenescape Shop. You know, the other good part about this not being live and me recording this is that every time I have this hacking cough, I could just edit it out. Nobody has to know. It's the joys of post-production. House of Glory presented its Judas show last night in Queens. I was really depressed that I couldn't be there. That's the first hog show I've missed in 4 years. Jacob Fatu beat Jonah to advance to the next round in the House of Glory World Championship tournament. And Fatu, I mean, Jonah's very good too, but Fatu is so good. If you don't watch MLW and you're not familiar with his work, this is a match I would recommend that you go out of your way to check out. The replay is up on Fight TV. Just to give you a taste of what he can do. So he moves on to the next round in the tournament. But the big news coming out of the show is that House of Glory will be making its Manhattan debut at Terminal 5 in NYC, Sunday, August 28th, live on pay-per-view with our biggest show of the year, High Intensity. High Intensity was my first House of Glory show in 2018, so it's very cool to see it move to that next big stage. There's going to be well north of 1,000 people packing that place in. I believe tickets go on sale this week. I'll let you guys know. Yeah, I've been to Ring of Honor shows in the past at Terminal 5, so there have been wrestling events there before. For those who don't know, Terminal 5 used to be the site of the old Mirage nightclub, which hosted the very first episode of WWE's old Shotgun Saturday Night Show that debuted back in 97. And it underwent a few name changes after that until the DEA came in and shut the place down. It's a much nicer venue now. So very much looking forward to being a part of that. But tonight is AEW Forbidden Door. It is the battle between the stars of All Elite Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling. This has been really years in the making, not even months, but years in the making, delayed only by this nasty pandemic. And as somebody said to me on Twitter yesterday, maybe this show was forbidden for a reason. Maybe this show should have stayed forbidden. Maybe it should have stayed that way. Danhausen has been busy. This show is cursed. They lost CM Punk, one half of their main event. They lost Bryan Danielson, who was the one guy I was looking forward to the most being a part of this show. They lost Tomohiro Ishii to a knee injury. Now we find out that Hiromu Takahashi has a fever, and he won't be allowed to travel to the U.S. for the show. Andrade had previously claimed that he was supposed to be on the show against Will Ospreay, but he got pulled, you know, due to political reasons. You know, if they make it through the rest of today with the rest of the card still intact, I'll be amazed. This thing is being held together by duct tape and rubber bands, but they are determined to get this thing done. And that does not even count the other injuries that AEW is dealing with. Jungle Boy now is said to be dealing with a shoulder injury. Buddy Matthews is hurt. Red Velvet is hurt. The Bunny is hurt. Kenny Omega wasn't able to make it back in time for tonight's show, and you know he wanted to. You know, Jeff Hardy is gone. We know that. So, I mean, it's not been the best month. But when this pay-per-view was first announced, there was equal parts excitement and criticism. Excitement from the people who are fans of not only AEW, but also New Japan, and find it exciting to have any kind of an interpromotional battle because we don't really get to see something on this level, like a big pay-per-view, you know, one company versus the other like this. But the criticism came from people who, you know, largely are probably not fans of the New Japan product or just feel like they don't have a way to really follow it. Maybe they just don't like it. And also who feel like this is a show that does nothing to make new fans or to cater to the casual audience. And of course, those people miss the point, which is that that's not what this show was ever designed to do. That's not what this show is ever meant to be. This is a gift from Tony Khan to his diehard, hardcore base of wrestling fans. And you can say he does that at the expense of his television ratings for the entire month, which have not been as strong as they've been in the past. You can say that that was a mistake and, you know, he's alienating part of his fan base. But again, this show was added to the pay-per-view calendar, where normally AEW would not have a pay-per-view again until September. As, you know, something fun for the fans who are into it to follow along with and be really excited about. And you know that there's a lot of excitement because the show sold out in less than a day. And they're running the biggest building, the biggest arena in the entire country. So when the show goes live on the air tonight, they're going to have close to 20,000 people in the United Center in Chicago. Because they've opened some more seats due to production, you know, production things that have been worked out. It might not hit 20K, but it's going to be pretty close. And they've already made over $1 million on the gate for this show, which probably puts it at number two behind the last pay-per-view, which was Double or Nothing in Vegas, which I believe has the record as far as gates are concerned. So the idea that, oh my God, this has been so detrimental to business doesn't really pass the smell test. You know, henny penny, the sky is falling. I think we can put that shit to bed. But this is Tony Khan's way of playing fantasy booker. You know, he's loving this. You know, he's a big wrestling fan. He's a big fan of New Japan. I'm sure he's had a lot of fun trying to put this show together, at least until the injury started to mount. I don't know how much fun it's been the last few weeks. It's probably been a fucking nightmare trying to put this show together, and then people are dropping like flies left and right. But that's what this show was meant to be. Is it going to make new fans? No, it's not. But I've been looking forward to it. I wish I was feeling a little bit better so I could be a little more excited for it. The plan is to go live when the show is over tonight on YouTube and do a review, but we all know this pay-per-view is not going to end until midnight. So that's the current plan, is to go live as soon as the show is over tonight. I will tell you, though, that plan is subject to change, depending on how I feel later on. If anything, if I don't do it tonight for some reason, then I would go live probably tomorrow afternoon. So there will be a Forbidden Door review within the next 24 hours, one way or the other. But the plan is to go live on YouTube tonight. Now, Tony Khan had a media call on Friday to promote the pay-per-view. And one of the questions that he was asked was about Jeff Hardy and what his status was. And Tony said that Jeff is doing much better, that he has entered treatment for his drinking problem. He said that Jeff's situation is very different than John Moxley's. He didn't like people comparing the two because Moxley also had a drinking problem and went to rehab. And I guess I don't know who these people are who are making the comparisons. It's a bullshit comparison. And it upset him. He doesn't like people making, he said, the comparison. It's two very different situations. Because Moxley, to the best of anyone's knowledge, never put anybody in harm's way by drinking and driving. And that's the big caveat there. Jeff Hardy was not only drinking and driving, he was driving with a suspended license. He had no business being behind the wheel. So, two very different situations. And Moxley also, he recognized that he had a problem. He just did a very insightful podcast interview. The video is up on her YouTube channel with his wife on Renee's podcast. Talking about what led to him making the decision himself that he needed help. It was not a case where he hit rock bottom and people just said, you've got no choice but to do this. he recognized that there was a problem, and he took the initiative, and he said, I need help. And he went to rehab. Again, very different than the Jeff Hardy situation. So that's the extent to which he addressed that on the media call. Now, he did make another interesting comment as well. He said that, you know, there are other people who drink in the company and they drink responsibly. And he admitted that they have their own wellness policy. He did not divulge any actual details about this wellness policy. And I guess he's not obligated to do that. You know, they're also not a publicly traded company the way the WWE is. I think he should. I think in the interest of full disclosure, if he's got a whole wellness program, maybe it's not as robust as the one that WWE has. But if he has their own program, then I think he should divulge those details and make them publicly available so people are aware of what the company's policies are. I don't believe that he's ever formally done that, but he claims that they do have their own wellness policy. But let's get into this pay-per-view here. Let me run down the card and give you my predictions, because some of them have changed. I did predictions on Friday night. I will tell you, actually Thursday, not Friday, Thursday. I don't even know what day of the week it is. Thursday night, because I did the Dynamite stream a day late because I was out of town. But some of these predictions have changed since then. Kevin Kelly is apparently going to be on commentary for at least some of the matches, which is awesome. I was wondering about that, if there was going to be any inclusion for the New Japan announcers, and apparently the answer is yes. I don't know if it'll be for the entire show or only certain matches, but Kevin Kelly said that he will be part of the show. And Kevin Kelly is one of the best announcers out there, so that'll only enhance the show. The buy-in pre-show has three matches, including Max Caster and the Gun Club taking on Kevin Knight, the DKC, who we saw get squashed by Hook on Rampage, Alex Coughlin, and Yuya Uemura. Some of these men, at least, represent New Japan's LA Dojo. I'm changing my prediction from Thursday night's stream. I originally had the New Japan crew winning this. Caster and the Gun Club should not be losing to these four. And since they've added more matches that I think are going to go to Team New Japan, I'm picking Caster and the Gun Club for the win here. We've got QT Marshall. This is one of those matches that was recently added. QT Marshall. Got to find a way on the show for him. QT Marshall and Aaron Solo of The Factory take on Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi, stablemates in the Chaos faction of New Japan. This is a no-brainer. I mean, it's a no-brainer win for Goto and Yoshihashi. Goto is one win away from challenging for the interim AEW world title, had he beaten Tanahashi a few weeks ago. So he's not losing to fucking QT Marshall. And we've got Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland taking on El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru, representing Suzuki-Gun. I'm changing my prediction on this too. It looks like Lee and Swerve's partnership is coming to an end very soon, and I think a loss here would speed up that process. So I'm going with Desperado and Kanemaru for the win. And then we get to the main card. And we've got Bryan Danielson, who was originally supposed to be on the show. And they had set up a program a couple of weeks ago. Zack Sabre Jr. challenged him in a backstage promo at the Dominion show. And I was pretty excited. That was not the match I would have booked. You know, best case scenario, it would have been Okada against Danielson, but that was never the plan. But nonetheless, Danielson against Zack Sabre Jr. would have been a hell of a wrestling match. And it was very strange because Danielson has not been seen since the Anarchy in the Arena match at Double or Nothing. And there was never even a mention of him on AEW television. AEW is very secretive and very tight-lipped when it comes to a lot of these injuries. They're very WWE and Vince-like when it comes to the injuries. And nobody really knew what the status of Danielson was going to be. And then he appeared on Dynamite this week. He was going to have some kind of an announcement. And he said he had good news and he had bad news. He never specifically said what the nature of the injury was. It sounds like it was a concussion, but he never actually said that. But he made it very clear, you know, all of his faculties are still there and he can run 2 miles without breaking a sweat. And don't worry about me and don't worry about my health. This is not the end of me. The bad news is, he's not medically cleared. He will not be on the card tonight, nor will he be part of Blood and Guts on Wednesday. However, he has chosen a replacement to take on Zack Sabre Jr. on this show. And didn't tell us who it was going to be, said that we are going to have to wait until the pay-per-view to find out, which is fine, because this match was never even formally announced in the first place. But there's been a lot of speculation about who it could be. Who is the mystery person going to be? And there's all kinds of names who have been thrown around. From people who are already on the roster but haven't been seen in a while, like a Samoa Joe, who I don't believe it's going to be. Because the nature of how Danielson was building this up makes it sound like it's somebody who we have not seen before in an AEW ring. That's my read on this. And also, he made it very clear that this person is going to be the newest addition to the Blackpool Combat Club. So, names have been thrown around like Timothy Thatcher, Johnny Gargano. One person emailed me and suggested Bray Wyatt. It's not going to be Bray Wyatt. But all these names, Jonathan Gresham, another name that was mentioned, and I'm hopeful it's not him, because to me that would be a letdown. I'm sorry, but it would be. And he was on Rampage on Friday nights, and so it looks like he's in a different program anyway, which is good. This person can only be one man. And I'm going to be very, I've already talked it into myself. I'm going to be very disappointed if it's anybody but this person. But the way that he was talking about him and really putting this guy over, and when I think about who would make the best fit for a group like the Blackpool Combat Club, who would be a great fit to get in there with a Zack Sabre Jr. and have a great technical match, but also go into Blood and Guts on Wednesday, and who can go in there and throw down and brawl? And I keep coming back to the same person, and that person is Claudio Castagnoli. I believe it is going to be Cesaro, who is the mystery man. I believe Cesaro will be the newest addition to the Blackpool Combat Club. We know what Bryan Danielson thinks of him. He thinks the world of him. He did his best to put him over. They worked together, briefly, on SmackDown. This is around the time Bryan had some creative influence on the SmackDown brand, before he left the company. He probably has Bryan Danielson to thank for why he even got that pay-per-view main event against Roman Reigns. His one and only pay-per-view main event title match in his WWE career. Claudio is the man. And I've got him beating Zack Sabre Jr. I certainly would not have him go in there and lose on night one. We've got Will Ospreay defending the IWGP United States Championship against Orange Cassidy. Andrade is the one who alleged several weeks ago that the plan originally for this show was him against Will Ospreay, and he was going to go to Japan and they were going to shoot this angle. Tony Khan, I think in the media scrum, indicated that this match here had been in the works for a while. Now, both of those things can be true, but when he says a while, what does that mean? You know, this match has been in the works for a month? You know, for 2 months? I don't know what that means. But we're not getting Andrade, we're getting Orange Cassidy, and you know, the Andrade match, maybe it would have been better, but I actually think this match is going to be very good. I think the people shitting on it, I think, are over-exaggerating. You know, we've seen Orange Cassidy go in there. You don't have to like the gimmick. You don't have to like all the nonsense and the comedy, but the guy can work. And the guy is one of the most over baby faces in the entire company. Now, is he going to win this match? No. That would be ridiculous. Will Ospreay just became the IWGP US champion, and Will Ospreay should not be losing this match. He is going to retain his title. The other thing to watch for, and this just broke last night, this comes per Fightful Select in a report from Sean Ross Sapp. Somebody is getting new theme music, and that somebody is Orange Cassidy. And the plan is for Orange Cassidy to begin using a new song possibly as soon as tonight. Now, they didn't say that. I'm just speculating it could happen as soon as tonight. It could be maybe on TV this week, but it should be happening imminently. He's been using that song by the Pixies, Where Is My Mind, for the past year. A lot of people like that song. I'm not really a big fan of it. So when I heard this news and I found out what song would be replacing the Pixies song, I was very happy, because I think this is a much better song. And it also happens to be the same song he was using on the independent scene. I guess Tony Khan has been working on getting the rights to this for a while. Apparently he got it. And the song that Orange Cassidy is going to soon begin using is Jane by Jefferson Starship. That is going to be his new theme music. I believe that is an upgrade. There's some people very passionate about that Pixie song. They're probably willing to fight me on that. I'm in no physical state to fight anybody right now, the way that I feel. I feel like I'm on fucking death's door here, but I believe that is a much better song. We've got Eddie Kingston, Wheeler Yuta, and Shota Umino against Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki. The original plan for this match was for Jon Moxley to have the Wheeler Yuta spot in this match. And then, of course, everything went to hell and everything got blown up and Moxley is in a much better spot on the card now. But to me, the heels are going to get the win here. And I think by doing so, it also... It does a better job of throwing more fuel on the fire for Blood and Guts on Wednesday. You know, we saw that crazy brawl at the end of Rampage on Friday night, which I actually thought was much better than the brawl we had at the end of Dynamite this week. And part of the reason was Eddie Kingston. He was going after Chris Jericho like he popped off about his mother or something, and he was trying to stab him with a pen. He was chasing him into the crowd. They fought back to ringside. Eddie was all over this guy. And I think Jericho's crew gets the win here, heading into Blood and Guts. So they're my pick. What was supposed to be an 8-man tag team match is now a 6-man tag, with the AEW tag team champions, the Young Bucks, and El Fantasmo taking on Darby Allin, Sting, and Shingo Takagi. They are calling themselves the Dudes with Attitudes. It was supposed to be an 8-man tag with Hikuleo of Bullet Club teaming with the Bucks and Fantasmo, and Hiromu Takahashi teaming with Darby, Sting, and Shingo. But we found out yesterday that Hiromu has a fever. I know that feeling. And so he was unable to fly in for the show. So now Hikuleo will be ringside and it'll just be 3-on-3. Doesn't change my prediction for the match, though. I still think Darby, Sting, and Shingo pick up the win. We've got Pac, Miro, Malachi Black, and Clark Connors replacing the injured Tomohiro Ishii to determine the first ever AEW All-Atlantic Champion. Again, Ishii had qualified by beating Connors last week, and then the news came down he suffered a left knee injury, and so he was not cleared to wrestle. And so instead of just making it a triple threat or finding some other New Japan star that at least has some kind of a name, they said, you know what, we'll put Clark Connors in. And I've seen very little of Clark Connors. I've seen some of his work. He seems like a solid worker, and you know, I don't think he'll bring the match down or anything like that, but it hurts the match not having a name like Ishii, because Ishii is great. And look, he's got more miles on that body than Clark Connors does, but it does lose a lot of that star power not having him in the match. But now, look, Connors is in there. He could take the losing fall. Only question is, who's going to go over and win the title? Is it going to be Pac, Miro, or Malachi? Look, I mean, if they want to shock the world, they could have Clark Connors pull out the upset win. I'm sticking with my prediction, and I think that this title is destined to be around the waist of Miro. I think he becomes the first All-Atlantic champion. We've got Thunder Rosa defending the AEW Women's Championship against Toni Storm. This should be very good. Biggest match of Toni Storm's career so far in this company in her short time in AEW. But too premature to take that title off Thunder Rosa. So I think they'll probably have a good match, but Thunder Rosa, I don't see her losing that title. So Thunder Rosa retains. We've got the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, FTR, against the IWGP Tag Team Champions, Great O'Khan and Jeff Cobb, against Roppongi Vice, Trent Beretta, and Rocky Romero. Winner takes all. So the IWGP Tag Belt and the ROH Tag Belts are on the line. And this should only end one way. This should end with FTR holding all the gold. FTR should win their very first IWGP Tag Team titles. They have all the gold heading into the inevitable rematch with the Young Bucks at All Out in Chicago. That's how I would build this up. But FTR has to win first in order for that story to work. We've got the IWGP champion, Switchblade Jay White, putting his title on the line in a four-way against Kazuchika Okada, who debuted in AEW on Dynamite this week, Adam Cole, and Hangman Adam Page. Jay White is another one like Will Ospreay who just won the championship. And I just can't see him dropping it this quickly. And since it's a four-way, I mean, take your pick as far as who takes the losing fall. I don't think it'll be Okada. You know, Adam Cole being the one to take the losing fall to his friend. I mean, there's potentially a storyline there. You could work around that. But whoever takes the losing fall here, the winner is going to be Jay White. Switchblade is going to hold on to that IWGP title just a little bit longer. And then we get to the main event. Hiroshi Tanahashi challenging Jon Moxley to crown the interim AEW World Champion. Moxley finally gets the match that he has wanted for years. Tanahashi is one of his all-time favorites. And it is a match that, unbeknownst to Moxley, Tony Khan blocked from happening several times previously. And Tony even laughed about it. Moxley wasn't laughing, though, when he found out. He was actually quite pissed that Tony was fucking around with the dream match that he wanted. But it just was not a match that Tony wanted to happen unless AEW was able to be involved in it. He also wasn't going to give it away to New Japan and wasn't going to let Moxley lose. So that's why he kept blocking it. And at various points, Tanahashi had a title, you know, in New Japan, and so he wasn't going to lose either. So the thing is, though, you know, for all the times that Tony Khan blocked, you know, admits that he blocked this match from happening, and Moxley was genuinely, again, genuinely upset about that when he found out, he wasn't planning it for this show either. It wasn't like, well, I don't want it to happen in Japan, so we'll do it here. We'll do it at the United Center. That was never the plan. It was going to be Punk against Tanahashi. But fate intervened, and now Moxley gets the match that he wanted. They are not crowning an interim champion just to put it on somebody who won't even be around to defend it. Tanahashi's got the G1 Climax coming up, and Jon Moxley is going to be the first ever two-time AEW World Champion, which sets up a champion against champion unification, or, well, I guess it would be unification, when CM Punk is able to come back. CM Punk, I'd be surprised if he does not appear on the show tonight. He might be limping around on crutches, but I expect him to be there. Maybe he'll do commentary for the main event. Maybe we'll get some kind of a stare down between him and Moxley when the show is over. But would be surprised for them to go to Chicago, to the United Center, and for Punk to not at least have his music play, come out, get the big reaction, and again, maybe sit in on commentary for the main event. But that is the card, and at least as of the time I am recording this here, this is still the card. Nobody else has fallen yet. I'm waiting to find out that somebody fell down the stairs, their taxi, you know, drove into a tree, something ridiculous like that. Hopefully, everybody will be okay. But the plan is to go live tonight when it's over. Whether that changes or not, I'll let you guys know on Twitter. Follow me on there, at Solomonster. If it changes, then I might do a review tomorrow afternoon. But at some point, there will be a Forbidden Door review. Now, before we move on here, since we're talking about New Japan, Kushida, and I think this was pretty much expected, Kushida, though, has returned to New Japan a couple of months after leaving WWE. He made his return to New Japan by confronting the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, Taiji Ishimori, on Tuesday's New Japan Road event in Tokyo. Ishimori had defeated Hiromu Takahashi in the main event before he was confronted by Kushida, who announced that he has signed a New Japan contract and promised to spend the rest of his pro wrestling life in a New Japan ring. And Kushida said that Ishimori may think that he has no challengers left, but he's wrong, because Kushida is back. And Kushida held that title 6 times before he left WWE 3 years ago. On his Instagram, Kushida had this to say. Said, "Right now I am still living in Florida. I'm trying to move to Los Angeles, but still am in the midst of moving. I will return to the U.S. this week and look to start a new life in Los Angeles next week. I hope. Sign an apartment? Can I speak English? So much troubles and busy every day, but will try and update my Instagram as much as possible. To live in Los Angeles and to wrestle has been my dream for a long time. I will look to accomplish this dream. Hopefully, I will look to bring excitement to New Japan. New Japan's Junior Division, and the New Japan LA Dojo. So, again, to the surprise, I think, of no one, Kushida is back in New Japan. Nothing new on the Vince McMahon front, but the fallout continues from the ongoing investigation by the WWE Board of Directors. John Laurinaitis is out, at least temporarily, as the head of talent relations, and replacing him as the interim head of talent relations is Vince's other good buddy, Bruce Pritchard, in case there was still any question as to who is in charge behind the scenes. WWE issued a memo to talent following Raw on Monday announcing Bruce Pritchard as the interim head of talent relations going forward. Per PW Insider, they also informed talent that pending the conclusion of our board of directors' internal investigation, John Laurinaitis, who has not been on the road since the investigation was publicly announced, has been replaced, or rather has been placed, on administrative leave. And the memo promised Pritchard would provide a seamless transition. So, Bruce Pritchard, who was fired in 2008 by Stephanie McMahon, who is now the interim CEO of the company, returns to WWE over a decade later as a vice president, ends up taking over the executive director position for SmackDown when they shit-canned Eric Bischoff after 4 months, and then becomes the executive director for both Raw and SmackDown the following year when they fired Paul Heyman from the position. He also oversees NXT creative now after Triple H had his heart attack and he got stripped of his duties. They have to report to Bruce. And now he adds head of talent relations to his resume. He's like the Ryan Seacrest of WWE. He's taken all the jobs away from other people. Meltzer says the reaction from talent has been generally negative to the move. One talent calls the move scary. Yeah, I'll say. You know, Johnny Ace being sent home while Vince McMahon continues to show up randomly on television is, you know, of course, a double standard, but you knew that was going to happen. You know, Johnny Ace is the good little soldier. He was always going to be the one to fall on his sword if anybody did. You know, him allegedly screwing around on his wife at the same time that she was dealing with a brain issue and had to undergo a brain operation, that's bad enough. We'll see what, if anything, the rest of the investigation turns up. Meanwhile, on Wednesday, Triple H had a meeting with talent and officials in Orlando, where multiple people at the meeting said that he used the words, "I'm back," when addressing them. But he did not specify exactly what that meant. And Brian Alvarez said Levesque noted that he was there for business reasons, but he could not say why yet. Naturally, people are getting excited that this is the first step towards the return of the black and gold. You know, not that they're going to blow it all up and ditch the bright colors and everything. I mean, that's here to stay. But, you know, that he's back in power and he's in charge of creative. You know, look, the timing is interesting that it comes literally within a week of his wife being named interim CEO and chairwoman of the company. But I'm sorry. I'll believe it when I see it. Let's not pop the champagne corks just yet. There is no reason to think that there are any wholesale changes coming to the NXT brand. And what's happened with NXT, and I'm going to talk about this week's show a little bit later. You know, what's happened with NXT 2.0 now, it has settled into pretty much what it's going to be. I think it has settled into this position. It is not an exciting show. It does not have that. There's a spark that's missing. So it doesn't have that same charm that once upon a time it had. They are trying to get over some younger, newer faces, right? Everyone's all gimmicked up. But they're trying with people like Carmelo Hayes and Tony D'Angelo and Grayson Waller and Bron Breakker and Tiffany Stratton and all of these different people. And some of them, I would have to think, are going to be able to get over on the main roster. I'd put a little asterisk next to that because you never know, right? You would think if you have a dozen of these people, you would think at least some of them will find success on the main roster the way that someone like Bianca Belair has, right? That's what you hope for. Bron Breakker, right? Can't miss prospect. How could they butcher him on the main roster? Well, you just give them the chance and wait and see. Anything's possible. I put nothing past these people. But the show this week, this past Tuesday, I thought was one of the better ones as far as character development and story enhancement and things of that nature, where I actually thought it came off well. And you can see some of the development in some of the characters. But it's just not an exciting show. It's just not as fun as it used to be to watch NXT. If Triple H was back, whatever the hell that means, you know, what is he going to do to really change the NXT that we see now? They're not going back to the way it was before, where they're going to bring in all this name talent or indie talent or anything like that so we can start having some more kick-ass matches on TV or we get some bigger names on the show. You know, they're already rotating main roster talent in and out. Apollo Crews is back in NXT. We had Natalya a few weeks ago, and before that we had Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode, and there have been a parade of other people that have come in and out of the brand. And that's fine. If they want to rotate people in and out, I think it's actually a good spot for Apollo to be in right now. Otherwise, he'd be sitting in catering doing nothing. So what changes is Triple H, potentially, really going to make to this brand? Because they're not abandoning their plan. They're not abandoning all the stuff that we see, you know, where they're kind of throwing all this stuff at us at once and everyone's all gimmicked up. I don't see any of that changing. That's why all this excitement, oh my God, Triple H, he's going to be back. Like, what does it really mean, even if he is? What does that even mean? How different is the show going to look? The show is now what the show is, and I don't see that changing whether Triple H is back or not. This idea that the black and gold, it might come back, or the black and gold is dead. It's dead and buried. It's not coming back. And you either accept NXT now for what it is, or you don't. I don't see how Triple H potentially being back is going to change much of that. Some other news and notes. Bret Hart marked the 20th anniversary of his stroke yesterday on social media with a photo of him walking to the ring at WrestleMania 26 and the following message. Walking down the aisle at WrestleMania 26 in Phoenix. Today marks 20 years since I suffered a stroke. I chose this photo because there was a time when I didn't think this moment would ever happen again, especially when I was struggling to turn my hand over, unable to walk or stand, and struggling to talk. When you suffer a stroke, the doctors never promise that you'll have a full recovery. I still have some weakness on my left side to this day, but I'm very fortunate to be here today having recovered what I did. I will forever be grateful to the doctors and therapists at the Foothills Hospital here in Calgary, and my fans around the world for their prayers. While the match itself will never be in anyone's top 10, this moment represents one of my greatest victories. And we are all very grateful for that. And to still have the Hitman with us when so many others are not, especially so many of his own friends and family members are no longer with us, we're grateful that the Hitman is still around. Tammy Sitch remains incarcerated as she awaits trial on DUI manslaughter charges. She's been behind bars now for more than 40 days. Jeff Hardy in rehab, Tammy behind bars, and the world feels just a little bit safer. Now even Tammy's own lawyer wants nothing to do with her. As first reported by PW Insider, Sitch's attorney, Stephen De La Roche, filed a motion asking the court's permission to withdraw as her legal representation, citing an impasse that has been reached in the handling of the case, making it impossible for the client and the attorney to continue working cooperatively on the case. The client has not complied with the terms of the employment agreement with this attorney, and the client will not be prejudiced if the undersigned is permitted to withdraw, which means that it wouldn't hurt Tammy or her case if the court allowed him to step away as her lawyer. He knows she's fucked either way. Him walking away doesn't help or hurt her case one way or the other. On Thursday, his motion was granted, and he was given permission to withdraw as her attorney, and all legal documents related to the case have been ordered to be sent to Tammy at Indian Lake Jail in Daytona Beach, Florida. From here, she could either hire a new lawyer or she could request a public defender. She could hire a voodoo priest. It would not do her any good. What she needs is an oar for the trip that she's about to take up the river. And it couldn't happen to a nicer person. And for this last bit, we go to the state of Alabama. where people have been tweeting photos of various billboards that have popped up in different places for a medical practice called Digestive Health Specialists, asking people to book their colonoscopy. The only thing is, the people that they're featuring on these billboards, I doubt any of them have any idea that their faces are plastered on billboards for colonoscopies. One in Troy, Alabama, features AJ Styles with the message that he turns 45 years old, time for his colonoscopy. Another one features John Cena. John Cena turns 45, it says, time for his colonoscopy. Same with Brock Lesnar. He turns 45, which he does next month. Time for his colonoscopy. How do you like to be the one who gives Brock Lesnar a colonoscopy and the anesthesia wears off? Apparently, there's one with Kanye West, too, although I didn't see a picture of that one. You know, I haven't reached the big 4-0 yet myself, and I've already had two of them, but I've never seen my face up on a billboard for one. I wonder what WWE thinks about all this. I think it's great. Any way to remind people to get checked can only be a good thing. Vince McMahon showed up on Raw for another random appearance like he did on SmackDown the week before. He came out, he called John Cena the greatest of all time, and he announced that he would be making his return on Raw this Monday, and he left. Almost tripped and fell out of the ring doing so, and then to try to save face, he jumped off the steps, and Kevin Dunn cut away to the announcers, just in case he blew out both of his quads again on the way down. Like I said last week, he's making it very clear to certain people, to certain audiences, that he is still here, and he is not going anywhere. It is the only reason for these random appearances. I'm disappointed he didn't show up on NXT on Tuesday night, but the show was taped. That may be the only reason he didn't. Rhea Ripley is out of the Raw Women's Championship match of Money in the Bank. The plague of injuries this month continues. A few weeks ago, Rhea accidentally kneed herself in the face. She got DDT'd, she floated over, and her knee just bounced right back into her face, and it loosened some of her teeth to where she had to undergo dental surgery. She had braces put on, but apparently she also gave herself a concussion. In responding to a fan on Instagram, she said that she was dealing with a brain and teeth issue when the fan questioned her by saying she didn't look injured. I mean, what a stupid fucking thing to say to somebody. Rhea schooled them by telling them, you can't see a brain injury, stop being incompetent and reaching at nothing. It's serious enough that they didn't feel she would be back in time for next weekend, so they pulled her. And on Monday, Bianca Belair announced a fatal five-way match with Asuka, Becky Lynch, Alexa Bliss, Carmella, and Liv Morgan, with the winner challenging her at Money in the Bank. Hey, you know, Sasha Banks and Naomi, they could have showed up like nothing ever happened. Hey guys, what's going on? They went with Carmella. Carmella won the five-way. Carmella, who had not been on television in 2 months. It's deja vu from a year ago, when Bayley tore her ACL and her match with Bianca at Money in the Bank was canceled, and instead they had Bianca defend her SmackDown women's title against Carmella on the first live SmackDown back in front of fans. 1 year later, here we are again. The only thing that's changed is the color of the belt. But the outcome won't be any different either. Matt Riddle, fresh off of his loss to Roman Reigns on SmackDown last week, he lost again, this time to Omos. Now he went into the match with his ribs taped up, that is true. That kind of gives him an out. He was injured going into it. But still, they booked him to lose to Omos in a Money in the Bank qualifying match, which means they can work big man spots into the match now. Maybe somebody will try to climb on Omos's shoulders and grab the briefcase, because this guy, otherwise, he's got no business being in a ladder match. After the match, Seth Rollins laughed at Riddle. He cut a promo until Riddle came after him. Rollins gave him a curb stomp. Before the match, Riddle had called out Rollins for what he did to Cody Rhodes, so this was Rollins' revenge for the comments that he made about him. Riddle has, he has to find a way into the Money in the Bank match. Rollins has already qualified. And they've done those second chance qualifiers with all the losers before. Riddle has to find his way into that match. But Omos being in Money in the Bank is just a complete waste of a spot. Bobby Lashley got revenge on Austin Theory for squirting him in the eyes with baby oil last week. He interrupted another pose down segment that Theory was doing by himself and squirted him in the eyes with what I am going to assume was supposed to be baby oil. This led to Theory announcing later that he had spoken with Adam Pearce, who made a gauntlet match. And if Lashley could beat three opponents, he would get a United States Championship match with Theory. Two of the three opponents ended up being Otis and Chad Gable, who Lashley beat. And the third man was Theory. I mean, who didn't see that one coming? Lashley pinned him with what actually I thought was a pretty cool-looking cradle to earn a U.S. title match of Money in the Bank. You know, we see so many cradle and roll-up and schoolboy finishes on these shows. This one looked great. Like Theory had no chance of kicking out of this. He also name-dropped John Cena during the pose-down segment in the ring, in case you were still wondering who's going to be coming out to confront Cena on TV tomorrow night. They promised Elias would be back on the show, and they gave us some video magic with Elias sitting on one end of a couch in a pre-taped segment in the back, and his younger brother Ezekiel sitting on the other side of the couch. They interacted with each other. They even gave each other a fist bump at the end. We knew what this was going to be, and I thought they pulled it off really well. It's kind of like the Three Faces of Foley promo, and that was 25 years ago. You'd think by now we could at least get an Elias hologram or something, but people also thought we would have flying cars by now. You know, Back to the Future Part 2 lied to me. I still want my hoverboard. They sell hoverboards now. They call them hoverboards. They're not hoverboards. They're not hoverboards. They should have come up with another name for them. It's a lie. I sound like Kevin Owens now. It's a lie. They're lying to you. It's not a real hoverboard. Elias came out for a concert. And I should mention that the fake beard glued onto his face was pretty obvious. But, I mean, what else were they supposed to do? Kevin Owens stormed to the ring. He wasn't falling for any of this. He called it movie magic. He said he had just seen a movie with a dinosaur flying a helicopter. Did they really have that in the new Jurassic Park movie? A dinosaur flying a helicopter? I stopped watching after Jurassic World. So I don't know if the new one is worth it or not. I know they brought the original cast back for it. But I don't know how good it is. Elias sang a song about Owens, and then Ezekiel showed up on the Titantron, and in the end, Elias smashed a guitar across Kevin Owens' back. Backstage after, Owens was being interviewed, and he was losing his mind when Ezekiel walked up to him, showing that it would have been impossible for him to change that quickly. Even though all of this, I'm sure, was taped long beforehand. And so Owens was just, he was beside himself. And tomorrow night, Kevin Owens has a match against Ezekiel or Elias. Or Elrod, whatever he'll be calling himself this week. Owens is carrying this thing as far as he can. How much further can he take it? That's the question. But Kevin Owens, he's putting the work in here. He is trying to make this as entertaining as humanly possible. In the Miz TV segment with AJ Styles, they drew attention to the fact that AJ has not had the best of luck recently, nor did he qualify for Money in the Bank. He lost to Seth Rollins. He's been doing a lot of losing since WrestleMania. Tommaso Ciampa attacked him from behind, and that led to a short match between the two that Styles won. So much for the story that AJ Styles has fallen on tough times and has been on something of a losing streak. Didn't take him very long to win against Tommaso Ciampa. Ciampa has no direction. And I think we knew this was going to happen. They don't know what to do with him, which is always the best time to call someone up from NXT, when you have absolutely nothing for them to do. You know, Triple H once said that they don't want to call people up from NXT unless they have a six-month plan for them on Raw or SmackDown. But Triple H don't run things no more. Even though now he says he's back. He don't run things no more. The reality is, even when he did run things down there, he still had no control over what Vince McMahon did with them once they left Orlando. Even under Triple H's watch, there were plenty of guys who got called up with no six-month plan. It was all bullshit. You know, it's like Triple H and his little baby birds. He's got one of his baby birds in his hand, and he sets them free. You know, fly, little bird, fly high. Fly as high as your wings will carry you. And once they get to the land of Raw and SmackDown, they fly right into a fucking wall, and they collapse, dead on the floor. Tommaso Ciampa has joined that list. We got a Veer promo with Kevin Patrick on the Oakland platform. It wasn't a great promo, but I like that they let him talk in his normal voice instead of his generic savage voice that they've been having him use. I think they need to do more of that. And Asuka beat Becky Lynch in the main event to qualify for the Money in the Bank ladder match. Becky is another one who very likely this week earns her way in through a last chance qualifier on TV. You know, John Cena, he can't come back any sooner. The only real needle mover they have left, just by announcing his appearance, they moved an extra 3,000 or 4,000 tickets to the show in Laredo tomorrow night. You don't think Vince McMahon isn't happy to have John Cena back? He's very fortunate that John Cena is still as passionate as he is about WWE that he's even willing to come back. And he will be back on TV tomorrow night. I think a lot of people, myself included, are expecting that there will be some interaction with him and Austin Theory ahead of what is likely to be a SummerSlam match. It's not going to be a Money in the Bank, but SummerSlam is coming up. They have a stadium to fill in Nashville at the end of next month. That would seem to be the likeliest match, but we'll see. We'll see what happens when Cena pops back up on TV tomorrow night. As far as SmackDown is concerned, there was no Brock Lesnar, and there was no Roman Reigns on the show this week after their segment at the end of SmackDown the week before. There were highlights, there were mentions, but there were no appearances. Neither man is on the Money in the Bank card anymore, even though at one point they were both supposed to be. And Roman Reigns for sure was advertised for it. But when they moved the show from a stadium to the MGM Grand Garden Arena, which is much smaller, all of a sudden Roman Reigns was not going to be on the Money in the Bank card. So since they're not at Money in the Bank, I guess it didn't make much sense to have them on the show and start promoting a match for a pay-per-view that isn't happening until the end of July. But it did make things a little less exciting on the show. This was not a very exciting show. Drew McIntyre and Sheamus, they had both been added to the Money in the Bank ladder match. They had a qualifying match. They were double disqualified. And then Adam Pearce made a decision that both men would be in the match. So then we start this show on Friday night, and Adam Pearce says that he's been overruled, and in fact, neither man is in the Money in the Bank ladder match. However, they could win their way back in if they coexist as tag team partners and can beat the tag team champions, the Usos, in a non-title match. Which, of course, they did. And so Drew McIntyre and Sheamus are, in fact, in Money in the Bank. So the show started with them in Money in the Bank, and then it ended with them being in Money in the Bank. That is what you call time filler. Pat McAfee challenged bum-ass Baron Corbin to a match at SummerSlam. So they are going to keep this thing going. I thought maybe it was a one-off thing a few weeks ago when the fans were laughing Corbin out of the building when he lost to Madcap Moss. They want Pat McAfee in a match on that show. Look, I can't blame him. McAfee is the best promo in the entire company. He stood up on the announce desk. He cut a promo on Corbin, who wasn't there, but he challenged him to a match at SummerSlam. He had the crowd in the palm of his hand. Everybody loves Pat. He is the best promo in the entire company. And as far as his in-ring work is concerned, every match I've seen him in, the Adam Cole match and the War Games match, I think it was, that he was a part of in NXT, the WrestleMania match with Theory, this guy goes out there and he delivers. I have yet to see him have a bad match. And Corbin is not a slouch either. You know, we could shit on Corbin and his character and happy Corbin and how terrible it all is. Corbin's not a bad worker either. So I expect them to actually go in there and have a pretty damn good match at SummerSlam. And as passionate as people are for Pat McAfee, it might have some of the most heat on the entire show, maybe outside the main event. I saw even The Rock gave McAfee his props on Twitter. Since McAfee kind of shouted him out during his promo, and he did the whole, you know, millions and millions thing, The Rock gave him his props on Twitter after he watched the segment. We also had the end of Ricochet, as if it wasn't already over. It's certainly over now. at a time when they could really use some strong baby faces on this show. It feels like such a heel-heavy show right now on Fridays. And Ricochet, once Jeff Hardy left, again, internally, he had been slotted in as the number two babyface, which was always just hysterical to me. And he won the Intercontinental Championship, and I mean, you knew how this was going to end. You knew it was just a temporary thing until they could get some other heel over and they would destroy Ricochet, and that would be the end of it. Ricochet lost the Intercontinental title to Gunther. He had his rematch this week, and he was destroyed. It was a squash. And he pulverized Ricochet. That was the demise of Ricochet. And I don't think it's really surprising to anybody, but in case you were wondering, now you know. And Sami Zayn and Shotzi Blackheart both qualified for Money in the Bank on this show. And again, there's a story there to tell. I don't know if Sami is the best choice. I'm not doing my Money in the Bank predictions right now, but Seth Rollins, he's got to be the favorite in that men's Money in the Bank match. I don't think we have all the spots filled in yet. But Sami Zayn, if he wins that briefcase, there is a fun story to tell as far as what is he going to do, given his ties to the Bloodline and Roman Reigns and him being an honorary member of the group. And they've been stringing this guy along for months. I think there's a fun story there. If he wins that briefcase, what is Sami going to do? And then to potentially use that as a way maybe to even turn him babyface down the road. You know, even if it's months from now. But Seth Rollins is still probably the favorite to win that briefcase. Shotzi getting into Money in the Bank, not a surprise. I mean, they don't have that many women on SmackDown. And I think Raquel is already in. Lacey Evans is already in. We saw Asuka qualify on Monday. I still think Becky finds her way in. Who am I missing? I think I'm missing one. But anyway, that's the way Money in the Bank is looking right now. And if I do Money in the Bank predictions, most likely it would be tacked on to the SmackDown review on Friday night. What I might do is I might just skip out on Rampage this Friday, and maybe we'll do a SmackDown review coupled with Money in the Bank predictions on Friday night. We'll see. We'll see. But NXT, let me just talk a little bit here about NXT 2.0. There was a note in the Observer this week that Io Shirai and Zoe Stark, former tag team partners, and they've both been out with injuries. They are both expected back relatively soon. And he didn't specify what that means, if it's a matter of weeks, is it a month? But they've been out, especially Zoe has been out for a while. I think with her it was an ACL issue. And they're expected back very soon. Io is, I think the Io thing was maybe some kind of a leg injury, I believe. Whether it was the foot or the knee, I think it was something with her leg. Because she was photographed once, I think she had a boot on her foot. Maybe it was an ankle injury. But she really needs to, they need to get her back into the mix. I mean, her absence has been noticeable. So the sooner they could get her back, the better. On NXT this week, they aired a vignette for another NXT UK talent making their way over to NXT 2.0. This time, it is Jordan Devlin, who is now going by the name JD McDonagh. That is his new name now, going forward. He is JD McDonagh, coming soon to NXT. And in this vignette, which was very well shot, it was very well produced, it showed him driving in what looked like a sports car. Looked like he was driving through the desert, right? He's coming to NXT, and I'm just thinking he's coming from the UK, this guy. Yeah, good luck with that. It might take him a while. If he's driving here, and gas prices are a bitch too, but if he's driving here, it could be a while before we see him on TV. The segment that really stood out to me, though, on Tuesday was the promo segment with Wesley. You know, Wesley has been trying to, you know, make something happen here ever since he lost his tag team partner. Nash Carter got fired, and the one who really gets fucked over is the other guy, right? When you're in a tag team and you fuck up or something happens and your partner is suspended or your partner is fired or he quits or whatever the case might be, it's the other partner who usually, you know, gets screwed over the most. And Wesley, all things considered, has been doing a pretty good job. I think he's been putting in the work. Some of the matches that he's had, they're telling this underdog story with him. He's not the biggest, he's not the toughest, he's not the strongest. He's got this, almost like this Napoleon complex about him. Guys have made comments about him being small, and he kind of snaps back at them. He's got this attitude. But the fans are getting into him. The fans like him. The fans are behind him. And he came out on TV this week, and he got very emotional. And they actually let him bring up Nash Carter. He kind of alluded to him a number of times and how tough it's been losing his brother and his tag team partner, and how his whole world exploded, you know, under his feet. And he started to cry, and you saw tears coming down his face. And, you know, he didn't shy away from it. He said, "No, I wear these tears, you know, with pride or proudly," whatever it was that he said. And he said under those tears, he found pain and anger, and he apologized and said he hasn't been acting like himself lately. He was just trying to prove himself, you know, picking fights with Zion Quinn and Sanga. He's just been trying to prove himself. And he wanted to prove that he can stand on his own two feet. And he was interrupted by Trick Williams, who came out and, you know, said that nobody wants to hear about him or his brother. And he said that, you know, Trick has no idea what he and you know, Carter went through to get to the top. He said that you don't understand that because you're playing second fiddle to your homeboy, Carmelo Hayes. He said that you're the hype man. Probably no hype for yourself. And Trick called him Afro Thunder and said that he'll challenge Wesley on his own time. He said that he's just going to leave the ring just like Lee's friends left him. But I thought that the emotion that Wesley showed in this promo, because, you know, there's a lot of real emotion there that he's playing off of. You know, Nash Carter in real life is his best friend. In fact, I don't know if this is still the case or not, but my understanding was that if he isn't still, Nash Carter, I think, was living with Wesley and Wes's girlfriend or his wife. I don't know if he's married. But I think Nash is possibly living with them. So it's like they're still friends, and I'm sure he's very upset about what happened. And not just how it affected his career, but because it's his boy, you know, it's his friend. And it sucks, you know, in his mind, what happened to him. So those tears, I'm sure, were very real. It wasn't all that hard for him to get the waterworks going. But I think when you play off real emotion like that, again, I've said this before, it makes for some of the best promos. Because it doesn't come off as phony, and it doesn't come off as disingenuous. It comes off as real and genuine, and you're playing off of that real emotion. And I think Wesley has the potential to be a big star on the NXT brand. I don't see any hope for him on a Raw or a SmackDown, because I just think he's too small for them to ever really give him the opportunity that he deserves. I just don't see it happening. But in NXT, I think he could definitely climb the ladder and be a singles champion on that roster, without a doubt. And he's got the fan support. So I think all things considered, you know, he got left in a lurch, but I think he's doing pretty well, all things considered. They aired, this was very strange, so they aired a cinematic vignette on this show with Apollo Crews. He's going around, he's writing in his diary. He looks like a fucking private investigator with his notepad. He's walking the streets. He's trying to confront his fears. He's trying to face his fears. And he's writing in his diary, and he's walking down the street. And he notices that in an alleyway, some guys are badgering and mugging an innocent bystander. And they did this weird deal where we see Apollo's inner thoughts. So he sees this going on. And then in his mind, he visualizes what would happen if he intervened and he tried to help. And it turns into something out of a fucking cartoon at that point, where like he's some kind of superhero and he goes into the alleyway and the guys, you know, mind your own business, and they come after him and he beats them all up, right? And then he extends his hand, he helps the innocent bystander to his feet, and like his knight in shining armor, and all is right with the world, right? But this is not happening. It's in his imagination. So this whole scene plays out, but then we come back to the real world. We come back to reality, the present day. And he makes the decision to go into the aisleway to approach the muggers, and that's where the segment ends. Very strange. I don't know what that was about. I don't know why you wouldn't just show him running into this situation and making the choice, you know what, I'm going to intervene, and just show him beating the hell out of everybody. But apparently, we're able to see his inner thoughts. So we're getting into some of this paranormal bullshit here. Very strange. Cameron Grimes is going to be challenging Bron Breakker for the NXT Championship at the Great American Bash on July 5th. We know that. On this show, he worked a singles match against Idris Enofe, who I've seen him and Malik Blade. They've been a tag team on TV, and Enofe's shown some stuff. You know, he's pretty impressive. He's still very young and very green, but I can see that there's something there. More so in him maybe than Malik Blade, but he worked a match here with Cameron Grimes. It only went about 5 minutes. I thought it was a good match. Of course, Grimes got the win in the end. There was a segment on TV though the previous week where Enofe and Blade, they had lost a match, but they were getting ready to go out and celebrate and party. And Cameron Grimes ran into them as they were about to leave the arena and said, what are you going to celebrate? You're going to celebrate what? You lost. It was almost like he was trying to give him a pep talk. It almost looked like it was the beginnings of some kind of alliance or a new faction or something. And Cameron Grimes is going to be the leader of the group. I don't know if that's the plan or not, but he wrestled Enofe here. He beat him. And then after the match was over, he got in his face and he shook hands with him and congratulated him on a good match. So again, this is some of that story advancement that I was talking about earlier that we're starting to see more of here on this NXT show. And, now we get to see a more serious side of Cameron Grimes as well. I don't know if the plan is for him to take both these kids under his wing or not, long term. But I thought this was a good segment overall. And then in the main event, we had Carmelo Hayes defeating Tony D'Angelo. And they're continuing the storyline where Legado del Fantasma, of course, after losing at the In Your House show, they are reluctantly part of Tony D'Angelo's mafia crew. We still had the one guy, I don't know if it was Stax or Two Dimes, who's already been fired, but since they taped 2 weeks of television, he's still on the show. I think this was his last appearance this week. He was there. But for the finish, Santos Escobar was supposed to slip the brass knucks to Tony D'Angelo. Well, instead, he slipped it over to Carmelo Hayes. And he ended up using them on Tony D. He picked up the win. And so that whole story is going to continue. And I will say this about Tony D'Angelo. For somebody with no independent experience, he only did amateur wrestling and then came straight to WWE. He's picked things up very nicely. He and Carmelo and Santos Escobar, all of them, and of course Bron Breakker, could all be players on the main roster. I just worry that they lay it on so thick with the mafia gimmick that it's going to turn him into more of a cartoon character on Raw or SmackDown if he ever makes it up there. With this same character and the same gimmick, he's going to be comedy fodder up there. And I think he can be more than that. That's my only concern. But otherwise, he's picked this thing up tremendously for somebody who hasn't really been doing this for very long. And again, didn't have any prior experience before he came to the PC. So anyway, those are my thoughts on NXT for this week. Now, there's something else about this week that I wanted to comment on. This weekend marked the 15-year anniversary of the Chris Benoit murder-suicide. And the Nancy and Daniel Benoit tragedy, the real tragedy, is what he did to his wife and son. It is the darkest day in the history of the wrestling business that someone who was so well-respected and mostly well-liked, by all accounts, would do something so monstrous and so evil. I still remember where I was and what I was doing when I heard the news. I was still at the office. Was checking the Wrestling Observer website before Raw that night because it was supposed to be this big 3-hour show, the funeral for Mr. McMahon. And I was on my way out the door and I was just checking the site and I saw that headline and my jaw dropped. takes a lot to really shock me. And I've never been more shocked by a wrestling headline, that I could tell you. And like a lot of people, I was trying in my head to come up with some explanation for how a family of three could die so suddenly, all in the same house at the same time. And the first thing I thought of was carbon monoxide poisoning. You know, I've heard, unfortunately, stories on the news, even here locally, and it happens where there's a carbon monoxide leak in the house and they don't have an alarm, or maybe it wasn't functioning properly, and it can wipe out an entire family. And that was the first thing that entered my mind. Oh my God, maybe there was a carbon monoxide leak and it just wiped them all out in their sleep or something. The thought of murder-suicide, the thought of Benoit killing his family, it never even entered my mind. It's something you don't even want to think about. It's something you can't fathom. But when the facts became clear about what had happened, and you read about how savagely beaten his wife's body was, and then, of course, what he did to his son, any sympathy I may have had for the man went right out the window. And it's fine to go back and watch his matches and acknowledge what a great wrestler he was, and that's how some people might choose to remember him. But Chris Benoit stained his legacy in one weekend and will forever go down as a monster who killed his family. And that's too bad, but what's really a shame is that the two other people lost their lives for no good reason at all. And on that note, the first question here comes from Luke in Maricopa, Arizona, who wants to know, in light of the anniversary of the Benoit tragedy, there's been something I've been meaning to ask. If Eddie Guerrero had lived, do you think it would never have happened, or would it have only delayed the inevitable? And I thought about that question for a little bit. You know, Chris was clearly pained by Eddie's death. We heard it from Vicky. We heard it from other wrestlers who knew him. I mean, Eddie Guerrero's death, it was like a family member dying. I mean, it affected him in a profound way. But had Eddie Guerrero been around at the time, I think, if anything, it only would have delayed the inevitable. You know, whatever happened in that house that weekend, maybe it started as an argument that Chris and Nancy were having. You know, Eddie Guerrero being alive would not have changed the outcome of what happened. If the circumstances were exactly the same, and whatever it was that just set him off in the way that it did, I don't believe that Eddie Guerrero being alive very likely would have changed much about what ended up happening. I think the same thing would have ended up happening whether it was that weekend or some other weekend. He had been physically abusive with her before. I mean, you know, Chris was no angel. He was paranoid. You heard the stories from his friends and the people that worked with him in the weeks leading up to what happened. He thought there were people following him. He was changing up his driving routes. There's all kinds of weird shit going on. Whatever was going on in his head, I don't think Eddie Guerrero living would have prevented this from happening. But I also can't be 100% certain when I say that. That's just my opinion and my read on the situation. The honest answer is we don't know. And we will never know the answer to that question. I didn't think he was capable of such a thing. And I was wrong. But nobody can say for sure what would have happened. It's one of those what-if questions that we can never have a firm answer to. But in my opinion, my belief is that it would not have changed what ended up happening here. Nick wants to know, since WWE is ravaged by injuries, I wonder if instead of another go-round with Brock Lesnar in the worst gimmick match in wrestling, that they should have just gone with a Hail Mary and tried giving Bron Breakker the God push and see what happens instead of warmed-up leftovers that went bad years ago. I think that would have been a terrible idea for Bron Breakker because it would have backfired on them. And it would have done no favors to Bron Breakker, because what you're doing in that situation Think about what you're saying there, right? I agree with you. I wish that they had some other plan other than to just keep going back to Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns. And the fact is they did. They did have other ideas. The reason they're going back to Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns is because in their mind, that's the biggest money match they could do. If they were just looking for another opponent for Roman not named Brock, they had other options. I named two of them last week. Bobby Lashley was right there for them, or AJ Styles. Two people that Roman has not decimated yet during his current reign of terror. It was right there, especially Lashley. The Lashley and Roman match was right there for the taking. But in their mind, that's not a big money match for the main event of SummerSlam when they have a stadium to fill, so they go back to their tried and true. So then why would they put Bron Breakker, who's completely unproven, in that spot? That was never going to happen. But I think it would have had a really negative effect on Braun. People complain sometimes about, oh, this guy's being shoved down our throat. This guy's getting pushed too much too soon. It would have been the same exact thing with Braun. And the people would have turned on him, and it would have been terrible for his career. On that short notice, to throw him into a situation like that that he is not prepared for. So no, that would not have been a good idea. And Umar from Sheffield, England, buy or sell on the better No Way Out match. Kurt Angle against The Undertaker at No Way Out 2006, or Brock Lesnar against Eddie Guerrero at No Way Out 2004. Both excellent matches in the 4.5-star range, I would say, if I was of the star rating opinion here. But I think the emotion in the story of the Eddie win puts it over the top, so I got to go with 2004. I got to buy on 04 and sell on 06. But both great matches. All right, I think I'm going to call it quits there. I'm very happy I at least made it through this show. I was not sure if I would be able to make it through. I was not sure. But I'm glad I was able to at least give you guys a show. You know how I hate missing shows, and I rarely do. So follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. If anything changes, I'll let you guys know. The plan is to go live at the end of Forbidden Door tonight. Probably won't be until midnight. But if I'm not feeling up to it, we might push it back to tomorrow afternoon. I'll let you guys know. But next week, hopefully I'm feeling better, is episode 763 of the podcast. That is going to be, I guess it's July 4th weekend, right? July 4th is that Monday. So it's Money in the Bank weekend. Money in the Bank is on Saturday, not Sunday. We'll go live after that pay-per-view as well. It's a busy week. It doesn't end with Forbidden Door. We're only just getting started with all this wrestling stuff that's going on. We got a lot of stuff coming up this week. John Cena back on Raw tomorrow night. Blood and Guts on Wednesday. And as long as I have breath in my lungs, I will plan on being here. So until then, be well. Stay safe. And I will see you guys probably back live on YouTube tonight, but for sure next Sunday for episode 763. Hopefully this will pass quickly, because as I said on the stream the other night, as somebody who's going through it right now, this absolutely sucks. And I don't wish this on anybody. Definitely be well and stay healthy. I'll see you guys next Sunday.
The Solomonster sounds off.
There are too many titles on AEW television. They're not even all AEW titles. Ospreay came out to the ring. He had his Rev Pro heavyweight title. He's in the ring wrestling one half of the Ring of Honor tag team champions, who also just so happens to be one half of the AAA tag team champions. Later tonight on this show, Jon Moxley and Hiroshi Tanahashi are going to go face to face ahead of their interim AEW world title match. Miro is going to wrestle Ethan Page in a qualifying match for the brand new All Atlantic champion. We also had an appearance on this show by Jeff Cobb and Great O'Conn, who are the new IWGP Tag Team Champs. Thunder Rosa came out, pulled up her AEW Women's Championship. Jade Cargill is having an open challenge on Friday for the TBS title. Did I miss anything? The Owen Hart belt, the FTW belt. It's too much. It's too much.
The Solomonster sounds off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster. Solomonster sounds off.